All right, this is the 17th segment, I think,
at least.
We're talking about creating bots, using the bot framework on Azure. And the cool thing is that we've gone through and we've talked a little bit about how to make your bots not suck,
yeah.
I think. And let's just get down to it, I think. But the last thing that I wanted to talk about was there was some serious intelligence happening in the background. There's a couple things I saw. The first thing that I saw was it was measuring sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Lewis intelligence, we talked about that at the beginning because we it's cool to have that in a bot. But then we also had some sentiment analysis as well as some Power BI predictive type stuff. I was hoping we can get into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's do it.
Check it out.
So let's talk about, well, I even forgot, it also did some picture things. So let's start with the picture
let's
thing.
Let's start with the cool picture demo. Yeah. So integrating with the cognitive services is super easy. They have a great set of documentation. They have a great portal that kind of takes you through each of the services. And they all operate, you know, roughly on the same kind of principles. They're all RESTful APIs. So when you go in and have a look at the code, I don't want you to be disappointed, Seth, because there's not a heck of a lot of code to do a lot of these things.
I'm impressed with little to no code.
Yep.
Because I'm an old enough programmer to know that the more code I write, the more stuff is going to screw up.
There's one or two bugs
FYI.
That we might introduce. Yeah. So let's jump into how we analyze an image.
Okay.
And it'll even fit on one screen
nice.
With large font, right? So it really is just a matter of sending the image. In this case, it's just a byte array.
Mm-hmm.
We send it up to the service and we deserialize the response. And the response will give us a whole bunch of interesting properties. Let me see if I can find the response for you so we can see kind of the things that we get back.
Okay.
Computer vision response, there we go. So we don't use all of this information in our particular application, but you know we get things like, you know, give us a description of it. You know, what kind of categories do we get? Is this actually got adult content in this? And we need to actually treat this a little bit differently to other content. So we get a whole bunch of metadata back. So you know, the bot now can effectively see stuff.
I see. And so because when you sent it your college picture, it knew, hey, there's no car in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you checking the responses? I've used this computer vision API where it says, I see a man standing by a computer, you know, drinking Diet Coke, which was my sample. I don't know. Right? You see what I'm saying? And so where is it? Are you getting some text back from the vision API that lets you say, whoa, those are not the kind of pictures we want?
Yeah,
where
absolutely. So this is where we use it. We discussed earlier in one of the earlier parts about how we had the opportunity to validate responses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the user will upload the image. We get to validate that before we continue to the next question.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, we just make a call out to the image API, and we get back a whole bunch of information. So we get back categories, we get back tags, we get the full description, and we can actually look for the word car, basically. We're just searching for the car. So as long as there's some kind of vehicle-related aspect to this, we'll let it go, and we'll let it go forward. But if it's, you know, anything not vehicle related, we'll give them the opportunity to try again.
Awesome. So this was super simple, and I knew it was going to be simple, so I want to do that first and get it out of the way. Let's talk a little bit about the sentiment analysis that you're doing. How are you creating that model, number one? Number two, how are you actually using that model? And then number three, once you know someone's ticked, how do you actually hand it off to someone else? I don't think we've talked about that.
Yeah, sure. So let's jump into where we look at sentiment. So again, you know, a similar interaction pattern here, right? So once we get a message back, we have the opportunity to validate, to look at what the user's response was. Here we are, you know, similar type of service that does a similar kind of REST call. We take that information back, and this one's actually even simpler because we actually get a score, right? We actually get a number, you know, zero being things aren't going particularly well, one going fine. So this allows us to hand off to another agent if we detect things are off the rails.
So how do you hand off to another agent? I'm trying to understand, like, you're going to have a bank of people or just me, right? Because that's going to be like, Seth, hey, get on the horn. Someone's ticked. Where's the code for that?
Yeah. That's definitely one of the more complex areas when we're building bots, right? Is how do you actually pull people in? And that's actually one of the differences between the different channels, because the different channels handle multi-part chats slightly differently.
Oh,
so I think we need to be realistic here. If we're going to do handoffs, this is a non-trivial thing. You're going to have to think about this a little bit, right? Because, I mean, obviously in a call center scenario, what we showed was really cool. The agent was just there. They just popped up. I hadn't even finished talking, and they were there. Chances are your call center doesn't have, you know, hundreds of people just sitting around waiting to jump into the chat. And And if you think about something like Skype, the user's probably not necessarily expecting them to jump into the bot chat. They're probably expecting a call. They're expecting, you know, a one-on-one chat with the agent. So that piece becomes a little bit more involved.
Okay.
But it is something that we can detect and we can trigger through the bot framework.
I see. So what you're doing effectively is you're sending a message. You might put something into a message queue that says, you need to talk to this person, and here's the lifetime. And then if the bot doesn't get a response within 30 seconds, it could be like, hey, looks like a lot of people are busy answering other questions. Could we call you back at another time?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. And that might be a much better solution than trying to pull an agent into the chat or waiting for 5 minutes until they're available. It might be a bit, okay, well, we've detected that you're not really making much progress with our bot. What's your phone number? We'll call you back as soon as we can.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, when I'm doing my own sock knitting business and I'm knitting socks, there's no way I'm going to be able to talk about, like, if the bot's saying, hey, you need to come, and I'm like, well, I got 100 socks I'm knitting.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
everyone's had that problem.
Of course. I love the idea of having the bot send a message to a queue, and then if it's not responded to within 30 seconds, be like, hey, would you mind waiting a little bit? I mean, it's the same thing for a call center, right?
Yeah.
And we could even play elevator music back. Is that right?
Well, I've never had that request.
Click this link and listen to this.
Interestingly, that is something that we are doing with speech text, right? So one thing we're working on at the moment is actually allowing people to talk to the bot and for the bot to talk back.
Okay.
And that's something that the bot framework actually supports through attachments. So while, you know, having the bot reply and attaching an audio file would probably make the most sense, we could also attach elevator music if you wanted to and have our website play that.
Make sure you have the copyright. So then the other question that I had was about the data you're sending back, because I saw where you're sending it back. How are you doing all of this analysis? Can I see a little bit of the data
can
that you're...
Can we preview that? Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go there.
So our...
Nice.
We can find a Zoom level that works here somewhere.
Sure.
So our data science pipeline starts with Azure Data Factory. And the reason it starts there is it has some really great adapters for the various services that we're using. So we can pull data straight out of CRM.
Okay.
Right? So we grab that data out of CRM. It uses an OData standard API. So it's not just CRM. It works with anything OData related.
So the interesting thing here that I'm seeing is that you were actually, at the completion of any particular conversation, you sent data over to the CRM.
And yeah, so throughout, it's really building up that profile of the customer in CRM. So it's super useful for the agent. But once that's all said and done, it's super useful for us as the business to actually be able to see the whole picture about, you know, what's happening in aggregate in our business.
So when you're looking at the CRM data set, that's coming directly out of Dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can pull a full set of whatever information we're interested in.
And let's just say you have your own particular system. You would literally, instead of calling the Dynamics CRM service, you would just post to whatever Azure storage you're using or whatever. And then you would call that from the actual data factory.
Yeah, there are heaps of great adapters that'll make this super easy. So the first one is the CRM data set, which is coming direct from Dynamics CRM Online. The other one here down here is actually coming from an on-premises SQL server, right?
Okay.
Because, you know, we recognize, you know, a lot of insurance companies, they're not just going to bail and go to the cloud. They've got, you know, decades of investment. So being actually able to connect to their on-premise servers is really important. And that's something that we can do through Azure Data Factory, right?
Awesome.
So we connect direct into their SQL server. We can pull out, in this case, we're pulling out claims data. Right? Again, that's something interesting that may not be in CRM. So we've got something about the people. We've got something about, you know, their history in terms of their claims. We're also pulling some CSV data just out of a blob storage over here. We're able to pull in some general census data that gives us a little bit more context about where this person lives.
Got it.
So we pull all of this information up, and we can do this on a schedule, so it's all automated. And then we push the whole thing into HD Insight. And the really cool thing here is that I don't have an HD Insight cluster spun up at the moment.
Oh.
Right?
Nice.
Data Factory will spin me one up, pull all the data in, run the query that I've written, and then throw it all away. Because I don't know if you've ever left an HD Insight cluster running in your subscription, but your manager or your approver gets pretty angry pretty quickly, right?
And the cool thing about HD Insight is that it actually is faking using Hadoop, but using all of our standard data sources in the background, which is super cool as well, because you're not copying data everywhere and duplicating all sorts of amounts. This is pretty cool too.
Yeah, so it sucks everything in. I've got a Hive query that sits behind that activity. It runs the Hive query, it aggregates data, so I get a nice row. I've got a nice set of features that I can use for my ML model.
And what is the ML model doing? As I want to see, okay, oh, look at that.
Yeah, it's like I might have actually thought about that before.
Wow, you're amazing.
So if we have a look at this model, this is actually based on a sample that's available in the Cortana Intelligence Gallery. So
sure.
folks can go and have a look at this. But what we have here is a customer churn model, right? So we're okay. going to be taking a whole bunch of the features about the customer, right? You know, how many complaints have they sent in recently? How many accidents have they had? You know, how much you know, do folks in their area make on average? You know, we try and build a whole picture of a customer from those data sets we talked about before. And in this case, we're actually running a couple of different model types. So we're going to pick a couple of nice models. We're going to train these models. We're going to evaluate them. We're going to compare the results. And you can kind of see that down the bottom.
We've got a
two-class decision forest on one side. We've got a two-class booster decision forest on the other. We run those both of those models out. We score both of them, we can evaluate them, we can pick the one that we like the most, and then what we're actually doing is we're taking the one that we like and we're publishing it as a web service.
As a predictive experiment.
As a predictive experiment.
Fantastic. So, and then you use this every time someone says something to, you know what, if it were me and this was an insurance company, I would literally, if they're just saying, hey, I'm really ticked, I would just break out to Eliza. Tell me how you feel about car insurance. And that would be really cool as well. All right, so what other things are you doing intelligence-wise, just to finish up?
So I think we already kind of talked around text. I think that one's text and speech.
Right.
Right. So one of the nice things about the cognitive services is that it's not just a US English model, right?
Oh.
You know, this is something that speaks a whole bunch of languages, right? And things like Lewis, for example, the language model, you can train that in other languages.
Oh,
right?
Nice.
So that's great if you've got the time and the skills to actually do that, right?
Sure.
The other alternative is to use things like text translation, right? So that's another cognitive service that you can pull in. So if you've started with English, but you know what? You know, you've got some other markets you want to go into. We can't necessarily afford to, you know, to hire a whole new call center that speaks a whole new language. Mm-hmm. We can actually use translation to help out there.
So the first thing you do when you get the text is you say, detect language.
Exactly.
Okay, and so then you would translate it and then go back into the regular pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this something you did already with your bot?
That's something that we're working on at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah. And we can do it on this other side as well, right? We can get the English response out, and then before we send it off, we translate it. But that's kind of what we were talking about before, is that because you get access to the data right as it comes in at that very low level, mm-hmm. it gives you a whole bunch of flexibility to actually, you know, hook into it there, translate it, and then pass it off to the rest of your infrastructure.
Well, this is awesome. I feel like people are going to want to be able to go look at this. Where can they go see the sample code? Where can they go download this stuff or do something? What would be your call to action here for people to get started?
We should definitely put some links below the video. Do you think we can handle that?
I think
we
can.
There are a whole bunch of great samples that we should suggest to people. I have got a couple of gotchas, though, that
Tell
we might want to... Let's avoid some pain through our experiences, right?
Okay,
so the first one is the cognitive services are numerous. They're fantastic. Definitely get hands-on with them. It makes your bot so much smarter. But one of the recent changes that they've made is that you now have to accept a whole new set of terms and conditions.
Okay.
And here's the gotcha. You have to have your Azure account administrator do it. So if you're a subscription admin, that's not enough. You need to be like the legit account administrator before you can create any of them. And you have to approve the terms and conditions for every single one. I think we use like 8. So that means you have to have the account admin approval 8. So
Makes
if you're
sense.
Getting some errors and you can't create, that's probably what's happening there. So a good
gotcha.
Tip to get started. But once you've done it, you're free and clear. Go
awesome.
For it. The next one is around state.
Okay.
Right. So obviously, the thing that makes these bots so cool is that they're stateful.
Sure.
Right. You know, they know what the last question was. They know, you know, what's going to happen next because they know how old your daughter is, or you know, whatever happens. Right. What's actually happening in the background is that your whole kind of dialogue chain gets serialized using a binary serializer, and then every time a message comes in, it gets rehydrated and it just magically reappears. Those words might actually trigger something to those of us that have been around for a while, right?
It did
you know,
to me.
ASP.NET 1.0 binary serialization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's really, really, really great until it's not.
Right.
And then it just, you know, drives me insane, right? So it's really important to be really, you know, aware of how you're managing state. So for example, for us, one of the key state pieces that we manage is our connection to CRM. Right, you know, what opportunity are we dealing with? What's the customer ID?
Mm-hmm.
And if you just chuck stuff up into you know, class level variables, sometimes that's going to work. You're going to be able to put things into class level variables, and it actually worked for us for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
When we went to the bot service, it didn't work as well because, you know, they do a lot of dynamic compilation, which
sure.
you know doesn't work particularly
well
with binary serialization. But I'm sure they're going to work on that and improve that. But I think the, you know, the broader point is that they have a whole bunch of APIs that are dedicated to managing state nicely, right?
And
so you
cool.
can be explicit and say, I'm going to put this in the user's data. This is in the conversation data, and you can actually really explicitly manage your state. So and that's smart, a really yeah. useful tip to avoid having a massive kind of binary object that you just, you know, it's hard
to
work
with. Just realizing as you're saying this that this thing is supposed to be stateful in a stateless environment, right? Because you're doing a post and then it's everything's there, and then all of a sudden something else happens and everything has to be rehydrated. So I love the idea of being careful about how you manage state, and I'm sure there's a number of options to do that. Don't just put it in the view state.
Yeah. We've been here before. Let's not go back.
Okay. Next gotcha.
I think they're the key ones. I think the other gotcha we kind of covered, which is just make sure you test on all of the channels.
Okay.
It's super easy to enable them, but we found that there were a couple of things that we needed to tweak to make the experience just really great for customers. So just don't click add, 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 and assume it's going to work. Click add, 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 test all of them, and you'll have to make a couple of tweaks.
He just told us to test our code.
Sorry.
I'm feeling like...
I've been doing this for a few years and I still haven't really learned that.
Well, and that's a good point, because if you're like really excited about, wow, our cards are so beautiful, mm-hmm. let's just add Twilio. Wait a minute. I mean, something weird's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And you need to make sure
it's going to mostly work, but you really, you know, before you get customers in front of this, you really do want to make sure it works in a way that you're happy with.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. This is obviously a 37-part series on how to do the bot framework. We've mm-hmm. gone through a really interesting example at the beginning. We've talked about how to make a simple bot. We've added some intelligence with Lewis. Then we looked at multiple channels. We looked at how to set this stuff up on Azure and add channels. We looked at a data pipeline and some intelligence and some gotchas. We are going to put some links below so that you can actually look at all of this stuff yourself.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.